It's the first FPL pod of 2024. We reflect on the key performers from last year, prepare ourselves for international departures, and warn everyone to maybe wait for the FA Cup games. Hello and a happy new year from everyone here at the FPL podcast. Wishing you lots of FPL points in 2024. We're back because there may not be any Premier League action for a week or so, but we do still need to review game week 20 and take stock. As always, Sam Bonfield, Julian Laron and Ian Irvine are with me. So happy new year to you all. Firstly, Ian, another very good week for you, ending 2023 on a high.
Yeah, well, it was a good one, yeah. Seven green arrows in a row now, so I'm quite pleased with that. Closing the gap a little bit more on some of the people in our little mini league amongst the group, which felt like a distant island at one point. But I'm a bit annoyed with myself. You know how much I went on about Phil Foden on the last podcast, and I didn't take my own advice. I chickened out at the last minute. Kept Son. I mean, it's not a huge difference, but I just would have felt so much better if I'd done that, considering how positive I was. But you're right, it was another good week, so I should be happy. And Sam is sort of beginning to feel me breathing down her neck now, so that's good.
Sam, I've written on my notes here, G.
Goalkeepers?
For goalkeepers.
Yep. The goalkeepers, honestly. So before the West Ham game last night, I was on for a really nice green arrow and I was like, oh, this is going quite well this week. But I knew that the goalkeeper situation, and I couldn't tell you how much I wanted Brighton to score last night. Like, if you were in my living room last night, it was like constant. Like, I basically turned into a Seagulls fan last night every time they got anywhere near the goal. And Areola kept saving them. And I was like, this is getting worse and worse. Yeah, so another red arrow based on the goalkeeper nightmare. And it literally was now based on the goalkeeper nightmare. It's still not horrendous, but I just can't get them right. And Martinez not keeping a clean sheet against Burnley. I need to go back to having just one goalkeeper and not have to make decisions, because having the two of them is becoming a nightmare.
Yeah, I benched Bravka this week as well. And then when I saw him save that penalty from Mo Salah, who was my captain, obviously that in the end went okay. But yeah, I felt your pain with goalkeepers, that's for sure. Jules, you're still leading the way. I'm surprised it's taking you this
Nobody's
long.
Surprised.
I thought you would have interjected and said
yeah,
it by now.
Yeah, but you know, it's new year. I wanted to let you. But yeah, best at the top, obviously. 86 points, which really looked like on paper a good score, actually. All the decent players really have had really good weeks, especially if you have a decent goalkeeper like me in Areola, who got me again 11 uh-huh. points. Paris born and bred. There's nothing else I could add. It was good, despite my defense to be shocking again, because Udogi got 2 points. I brought in Malo Gusto, like I said I would, and he got zero, obviously. And William Saliba got, again, a bad week as well with 0 points. So it could have been better. But I chose to captain Ollie Watkins. And you know, the thing with Ollie Watkins as captain, he had 2 assists. He got 8 points. It's a really decent return. But he was the first one to play of all our captains, because we all captained a different player. So he was the first one to play. Then obviously you had Bukayo Saka who played. And I was like, please, I want you to do well, but not too well. Julian Alvarez played first, by the way, sorry. So I know you, Ian. I was like, please, I don't want you to do anything at all. Then Saka, then Son. And then Salah, obviously, and Salah was the one that obviously did the best of all of our captains.
I'm really glad Jules' weekend revolves around checking our captains and making sure he's beaten us. We're in his head, guys. We are in his
Completely.
Head.
Completely.
I also brought in Gusto, by the way. And Jules, did you see that he was on 6 points and then they decided to concede those goals at the end and he just wiped them out?
I could not
and didn't
believe
even get
it.
One.
I know.
Zero.
I know.
Yeah.
He got booked in about the 94th minute as well. I was laughing
well.
About that.
Nah, yeah. It was just
did you enjoy
nice.
That as well, Ian?
I love that. I was going to bring Gusto in for Lascelles. That was. And in the end, I went for Branthwaite because I was looking ahead to when Chelsea could get in the League Cup final and stuff like that. And I wanted someone who I knew was playing that week. And that's game week 26, is it, from memory? I did know it last week when I looked. So, yeah, I laughed a lot at Malo Gusto getting booked, getting his zero.
That is some serious forward thinking there. That definitely wasn't on Jules' radar when he made that transfer.
For sure.
No. Okay, well, as we said, there is no Premier League action this weekend. It's the FA Cup. The next deadline for game week 21 is on the 13th of January. Off the Bench won't be with you this week, so we'll kind of have a little look back on the main talking points. We've touched upon some of them already. Sam, do you want to move on from goalkeepers? Do you want to discuss Dubravka anymore?
No, maybe? Not really. Let's just move on from all goalkeepers. In fact, they no longer exist to me in the game. I might just play with 10 men from now on.
You have
on.
Been the last few weeks, so why change it?
Yeah, don't change.
My other half got 108 this week with 10 players, so maybe it is the way forward.
Yeah, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because the goalkeepers, it really is feast or famine with them. So they're either getting like one and doing terribly in games that you would expect them to do well in, or when you're expecting them to not play that well or do that well, like Dubravka against Liverpool, then goes and saves a penalty and gets a monster haul. So it does kind of feel like with the goalkeepers right now, you just pick one, you stick with one, and then you let them play out regardless of what happens, because it can be difficult. And it is at the moment difficult swapping between them. But yeah, Dubravka saving that penalty. He and Areola were making so many saves in their two games that actually both of them looking really excellent.
We'll go through positions very shortly, actually, because the second wildcard is now available for everyone to use. And it won't surprise you, Jules, to hear that I'm not planning on using mine for absolutely ages. We know I like keeping chips till the end of the season.
Yeah, all three of them.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to do
in
that
in the last 3 weeks.
No, I learnt my lesson from doing that. Let's go through some more of the talking points anyway, and we'll come on to positions very shortly. Ian, I already mentioned to you City there. Alvarez was actually the most transferred in the end. You captained him, right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, I kept him despite for weeks wanting to sell him. I think I wanted to sell him when Jules sold him weeks ago. Foden was the second most transferred in. Haaland was the most transferred out. Where are we at with City assets, particularly in attack at the moment, do you think?
We need them, definitely. I mean, people did well this week without them, in fairness, and people did well with them as well. But I feel like, I mean, I talked about this a lot on the last podcast, so by all means, go back and listen to me going on about Phil Foden and Manchester City's attack. But I'm going to do it again because they just look to me like they're hitting their groove at the moment. The results over the festive period have gone pretty well for them too in the Premier League table. So, you know, they win their game in hand, the 2 points behind Liverpool. They faced Newcastle in game week 21 as well. And anyone who watched that Liverpool game against Newcastle will now also be targeting Newcastle's defence. The stats were absolutely ridiculous. 7.27 was Liverpool's XG. That is the highest XG ever recorded in a Premier League game since they started collecting that data in 2010. Newcastle's defence is the worst in the Premier League for expected goals conceded since the start of November as well. So even if Erling Haaland's not fit for the Newcastle game, which he could be, we might all be piling on there. We definitely need some City coverage, I think, moving forward, starting with game week 21, if you didn't start with game week 20.
Yeah, backs up what we said about Newcastle as well, doesn't it? Watching them, although I was a bit disappointed to see Anthony Gordon return when he was on my bench. In terms of other players, someone else that Ian is waxed lyrical about recently, turns out we can keep him a bit longer because he does know what he's talking about. Cole Palmer, you were saying the other week how he was remarkable, his form despite his price. He got a brace and an assist and all three bonus points. What a performance, Jules, for him against Luton. And now we can't bench him, can we? It feels like we have to start him every week.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, he's the big star in that team. Not just the big star, but the guy who makes things happen even when the team is not really functioning that well collectively. Because I think they're still quite disappointing as a team, the way they play. And maybe that's why he's shining so much, because he's that good, that much better than everybody else. But the goal where he goes around the goalkeeper after just dragging the ball with his thirds is just exceptional. And the confidence that he has now from the first half of the season is so good for him, and so good to see that there's no way if you have him, you benched him. And again, we said it almost on every show, his ownership is still quite low considering how good he's been and how much he's returned. So Cole Palmer, outstanding, really, in that game away at Luton, even if Chelsea overall were not actually that good. But he was once again the best thing about them.
Elsewhere, Sam, another team continuing to impress. In fact, they beat Chelsea on Christmas Eve. Wolves, are we sleeping on their assets, do you think? I'm also mindful that they are going to lose Hwang, because, of course, he's going away to the Asian Cup.
Yeah, and I think probably we have been a little bit. Although a lot of managers did move for Hwang earlier on in the season, and he's been a triumph if you've had him in your team. Obviously now with him going off to the Asian Cup, you do need a replacement if you've got him. But Kuna up top, he was my differential a few weeks ago, and he has been really, really good and going under the radar. So if you are looking to change up the way that your team is structured, move to a front three that doesn't have so much money invested in it, so you maybe don't want to have a Darwin, an Alvarez and a Haaland, or you don't want a Watkins in there. I don't know why you wouldn't want Watkins, but you know, if you don't want your third striker to be quite as expensive as one of those guys, then having a little look at the Wolves front man looks decent. And yes, you're right, Hwang going might have an impact. Well, it will have an impact on them. But they are looking really good and the new systems are working well. So I think going forward, they look like a good option, but also defensively. I was really impressed with them defensively on Christmas Eve against Chelsea in particular. I thought they were really solid in that game. So having a look at somebody like Kilman, or if you've got a goalkeeper headache and you want a new goalkeeper, then maybe Jose Sarr, if you don't want to go for Areola or you want to think outside the box. I think I just need to have all the goalkeepers in the game every week and just pick from them. But yeah.
You'd still pick the wrong one.
100%, I definitely would.
Don't buy Dubravka, please.
Yeah, I'm not making any more goalkeeper changes, that's it. I'm just going to keep with the two I've got from now on and hope for the best. But yeah, I really like Wolves. And I think depending upon what word is on Haaland and whether we need to be investing in him straight away, the Wolves team generally might be a team that I look to move to come January. That doesn't make any sense. Come game
Who knows
21.
What day or year it is. Another team that maybe, I wouldn't say we've been sleeping on because they haven't had the form to back up our selection, is Nottingham Forest. Nuno looks like he's had a real impact there. Sorry, Ian, to bring it up because, of course, they did beat Manchester United. Anthony Elanga getting an assist as well.
That's right.
I know you'll have watched that one closely, maybe not from a Forest point of view, but hopefully you had your FPL hat on as well and can give us some insight into whether we should be looking at them.
Yeah, Alanga's the one, I think, if you're looking at Nottingham Forest at the moment. I owned Morgan Gibbs-White a few weeks ago, which didn't turn out to be a very good decision. But obviously, he got the winning goal against Manchester United. And they just look like a more coherent unit, which obviously then comes on our agenda for FPL. The fixtures are a bit mixed, to be honest, though, over the sort of medium term. Brentford away, Arsenal at home, Bournemouth away, Newcastle at home, West Ham at home, Aston Villa away, Liverpool at home. They're not brilliant, to be honest. So maybe it's a watching brief still for the time being, because they've got a lovely run around game week 28, 29, where they've got sort of four or five fixtures there, which look pretty good. And it's still early days with Nuno. Yes, they've improved, no question at all. But that defensively, they're not quite, you know, they don't look quite as solid in terms of keeping clean sheets going forward, the scoring goals. So I do think Alanga's the one if you're looking at any of them, because he seems to be the most consistent. But I'm not in a rush to get Forest players just yet, to be honest.
No, I know the feeling. And Morgan Gibbs-White maybe shows you were just going a bit early on that one. You just were ahead of the curve, weren't you? Jules, what about Arsenal? Sorry to bring this up as well, because it hasn't been a good week or so for Mikel Arteta's side. The defence is so frustrating from an FPL point of view, though.
Yeah, it is. You're right. When you concede goals, like the way they concede them as well, you can always concede goals. Sometimes there's just nothing you can do. It's a brilliant goal. In other times, like the first one against West Ham, like the second one against West Ham, like the first one against Fulham, they are avoidable goals, really. And the mistakes, the lack of communication at times between some of the defenders has had a big impact. And of course, if you had Gabriel or Saliba or Zinchenko or Raya, whoever, or White, then you've struggled with them. I would still hold because they've got Palace and Forest in the two games coming up. Then it's Liverpool and West Ham away. So that might be a bit more difficult, but certainly the Palace at home and Forest away, I think you could still keep them or one of them at least and see what happens, because before the West Ham game, they were still defending really, really well. So let's just hope for them that it's a bit of a blip and just a bit of an accident, even back-to-back accident, and that against Palace at home, once they've played in the FA Cup against Liverpool, they can go back to that defensive rhythm that they had before the West Ham game.
It's difficult, Arsenal, isn't it? One clean sheet in seven game weeks they've had, which normally if you owned a defensive asset and they had that sort of record, you'd be getting rid. But they are historically one of the best defences in the league. So that gives you the faith that it is going to come good. But we saw Manchester City last season, their data all year was great for defence, yet they never seemed to keep clean sheets. Week after week, they would concede one in a 3-1 win or a 2-1 win or whatever it might be. And they just let us down. So I think there is obviously other priorities. We're going to talk about the impact that the Africa Cup of Nations and the Asian Cup are going to have on FPL. So we'll be looking elsewhere for our transfers, I think, over the next couple of weeks. But I wonder what point it gets to with Arsenal where we think they just aren't going to keep clean sheets.
But nobody does, to be fair, Ian. Nobody really keeps clean sheets.
That's the other thing, isn't it?
As well, so,
yeah, that's the other aspect. It's not like there is any defence standing up at the moment, really. Liverpool, maybe. Obviously, they conceded against Newcastle, but their record recently has been pretty good, although their fixtures are getting a little bit more difficult. So clean sheets have been tough this year so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've been really tough. And I think it goes back to what we talked about last week and the fact that maybe we'd be moving off Arsenal defenders, Sam, if there were some really good budget options available. But it feels like at that price point, to find an alternative or a cheaper one is quite tough at the moment.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that there's a real need to move off them either, because it's not like even at that kind of 5 million bracket, there's anyone that's really kind of standing out. Obviously, there's Trent, who I bought in this week and didn't return, but that was more of a long-term pick. Oh, thanks, Jules. And I think, you know, when it comes to the next couple of weeks with Son and Salah disappearing off, you're going to have so much budget that you can afford to have more expensive assets in your team. And so for me, like as a Saliba owner, I'm not panicking on him at all. Like, yes, it's a bit frustrating at the moment, but he's not a priority sell at all for me.
Everyone owns them as well. That's the other thing. So we're all suffering together, aren't we? Which means you don't really need to act in that sense.
I do think if you have two of them, I'd get rid of
because
one.
Because the pain is shared, we should all just go along with it.
Yeah, because it's not really a gamble, is it? You know, normally, if it's you owning them alone and they're suffering every week and other people have got different assets which are harming you, then there is far more reason then to jump off. Whereas if we're all in the same boat together, some people are carrying double Arsenal defence at the moment, so they've got double the pain that you're feeling with their situation. So Sam's right. It's not a priority at the moment. It's not something urgent, but I wonder if there will come a point where it gets to sort of 15 games and they've had one clean sheet where we might have to rethink it.
I think when Son and Salah come back, if we're still not seeing clean sheets from Arsenal, at that point, I'd be looking to downgrade my Arsenal defender to somebody a bit cheaper to enable the budget to be spent elsewhere. But whilst we don't have that restriction on our spending, I don't think there's any need to sell the Arsenal players.
Okay, just finally, West Ham Brighton won't live too long in the memory. I'll be honest, I kept flicking over to the darts instead. but I did see enough from West Ham to know, Jules, that without their key players, without Kudus and Paqueta, they're still picking up points. Yeah. You can't deny it. David Moyes doing a brilliant job. But it's harder to see the appeal of West Ham players, I find, and particularly Jarrod Bowen, though lots of people are going to move for Jarrod Bowen with Son and Salah going.
Yeah, I think he was a great option to go to for Salah or Son, but that was before the Paqueta injury, and certainly now Kudus leaving as well for AFCON. It's tricky. I think Saïd Benrahma could also leave the club in January because he wants to play more, so he could come home. And I think they will certainly replace him if he moves, if they sell him. But yeah, you do wonder where the creativity is going to come a bit. I mean, Ward-Prowse can do it, but it's more on set pieces than really in the game. Suchek, not really. Alvarez, I think, is too deep anyway. So you look at Fornals, and Bowen can't do everything on his own as good as he is. So it's I think that maybe the in the game, certainly the stock of Bowen is just kind of went down a little bit.
It's the position for Bowen as well, isn't it? Because he's been great through the middle. I think 6 of his last 7 goals have been scored when he's played as a centre forward. He was scoring before that on the right wing earlier on in the campaign, to be fair. But obviously it's been through the middle in recent weeks where he has shone. Kudus and Paqueta not being there obviously lessens the attack, like we've said. And Antonio is back in training as well, David Moyes said after the game last night. Now, he's had problems over recent years, so I'm sure West Ham will be really careful with him. But obviously, if those two are out longer term, Kudus stays at AFCON longer and Paquetá's injury sort of rumbles into February maybe. I don't know how severe that is, but say it does. Then you can see Antonio coming back into the team for West Ham and then Bowen's back on the right wing. So he's definitely not quite as appealing as he was a couple of weeks ago. I mean, I think we spoke on the last pod and Jarrod Bowen was pretty much the number one replacement for Salah and Son. Well, I think it's going to be interesting to watch the FA Cup now. There's going to be a lot of scouting going on during this FA Cup third round to see what shape these teams are in without the players going away for the two tournaments. And West Ham are one of those sides that we need to have a close look at, I think.
It's a really good point, actually, Sam, isn't it? Because we'll all be desperate to do something about Son and Salah. But as Ian said then, there's actually a really good scouting opportunity. I know we don't want to miss any price rises or price falls, but it's getting that balance, isn't it? And actually waiting and seeing what happens with certain players this weekend is probably advisable.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Because there's been a lot of transfers out already for Salah and Son. Salah was sold en masse after his returns against Newcastle on Monday night, dropped 0.1 by Tuesday morning. Son's dropped 0.1 already as well. So managers are moving early, but I absolutely agree with what Ian's just said. I think with a full round of FA Cup fixtures, as well as League Cup fixtures for some of these teams, we've got really good opportunity to just watch and see. And Bowen was my top target going into game week 21. He was the one I was really focused on. And the game last night did massively put me off because West Ham just were not the same attacking force that they have been in previous weeks without the most of their attack. So I'll be watching them closely in the FA Cup in particular to see whether there's any improvement there and what the changes might look like in terms of Jarrod Bowen and whether he therefore remains the most popular one for me to go to from one of my expensive premium midfielders.
Okay, we'll go through positions very shortly, but a recap in case you hadn't guessed on our mini league. Jules, in case
who's
you
winning?
Mentioned, is top. You're top by seven points, actually.
Yeah, everyone.
I think your lead's been cut a tiny bit.
Every little helps. It doesn't matter. Who's top? Happy New Year!
Pray for us, everyone. Pray for us. I've got one wish in 2024. It's for Jules not to win this mini league. Anyone but Jules. I'm 7 points behind
Jules.
It's
so good to do this show at the top, you know. And like,
Sam is
so
good.
You know what? If Ian wins this league, then that would be the best thing that could happen here.
Yeah. If he's my brother, I'd be happy for him and happy for myself. As long as it's not,
just not
any
us.
Of
well,
you
you'll all
girl.
Take credit if I end up winning this league,
true,
to be fair, because
true.
I was doing
That's
so
why
badly
said it.
Until I sat down and spoke to you three every single week. So, yeah.
Well, the reason that Sam is saying it could happen is I'm 7 points behind Jules. Sam is 14 points behind me. That's never happened and won't last. I think
so
I'm
she's 20 points, 21 points behind me. Okay.
Yep, 21 points. Yeah, Sam, I want you to beat all of us. If it means beating Jules, I really want you to beat me as well. And then Ian is creeping up, only 27 points behind Sam now. And only, I'm trying to do live maths here.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's really...
This is on
I've
sleep.
Not had
nice
much
well,
sleep, guys.
Maths.
I've not had sleep.
19 plus 19.
38.
There you go.
Hey!
Is that different? No, that's not right, though. It's actually 29 plus 19.
Right,
48 points.
10, yeah.
Oh, is
it's
it?
48
Sorry.
Points.
Oh,
Ian
well.
Was trying to make out that he was closer to you, Jules. It's still 48 points. Anyway, hopefully. I know that the producer isn't going to cut that out to make me look better. But
we'll just blame the baby. We'll blame the baby.
There's the inner workings of an overtired mother of a newborn. That's for sure. Do not do maths when you're sleep deprived. Anyway, on to the FPL Pod League that you guys all play against us in. And Michael does remain top with his team. Comeback kids. He picks up 97 points despite not captaining Salah. Alongside Son and Salah, he had returns from Areola, Richarlison, Palmer, Watkins and Cunha. He even managed to bend Isak for his 6 points. Michael is now third in the world. I'm firmly Team Michael. Wouldn't it be really cool if the FPL winner overall...
It'd be amazing, yeah.
One
was in our league.
Yeah,
that would be incredible, wouldn't it?
Absolutely.
Also, special mentions for Ite and Ois, who both hit the 100 club this week, and they sit third and eighth, respectively, in the FPL Pod Mini League. Okay, so it is the start of a new year, and with not having a game week to preview this week, we thought we'd take a little look back on the year that was in 2023. You may have seen that on New Year's Eve, official FPL published a list of the highest scoring players in FPL terms for each club in 2023. So we thought we'd just reflect upon them. And Sam, I know you'll have dived into this and probably been part of the team that were actually putting this together. When you looked at the top scorers, was there anything that surprised you?
Oh, there were some real shocks, I think, in there. So Ollie Watkins, more points in 2023 than Erling Haaland, which really shocked me when I saw that. Hwang returned 141 points in 2023, which I thought was quite good for Wolves player, actually. And then I looked at it in more detail and I thought, well, how many of them has he actually got this season? 100. He's got 100 so far this season. So when you think about the second half of last season through the end of the season, he got 41. So we've got 100 already. It shows what great form Hwang has been in for Wolves. The other thing that really stood out for me was the Chelsea top scoring player. So it was Raheem Sterling. Only the three newly promoted clubs had a lower scoring, higher scoring FPL player than Chelsea.
Wow.
Yeah. And they've only been in the league since August. So it's fascinating to me that Chelsea are down at the bottom, because in the past we would have expected to have been able to invest in Chelsea and have lots of their assets. And I know over the course of this year we've obviously been waxing lyrical about Palmer, as we did earlier on. So I looked at him. He's had 92 points since the start of the season. 89 of those have come since his first start in game week 7. So he's not far off being on Raheem Sterling's points for the whole year, to be honest, already. So I think we will have better Chelsea assets moving forward. But I was really surprised to see them quite as low as they were.
Any other players that maybe, Jules, you look at that list and you think we haven't given them enough credit this year?
No, I don't think so, because they are really, if you look at them, they are each club's sort of best player or big star, really. So Salah and okay, Carlton Morris and Luton, maybe not so much, but you've got Salah, Haaland, Bruno, Trippier, Gibbs White, who is certainly Forest's best player, Son, Bowen, Saka, all of them, really. So in a way, it's good because the game is a reflection of what happened in real life, which is always a good thing, I think. But it also shows that outside of the big stars that a lot of the managers will have in the game, which is normal, what also makes the difference is when you find who's in form for those four or five games in a row that is not the big star for each team. And I think this is also the part that is so exciting by playing the game. But apart from that, I just thought that, you know, if I ask you who is Crystal Palace's best player, really, you go for Eze or maybe Olise. But yeah. Eze is there with the most points for his club. So Lonki for Bournemouth, and Bomo for Brentford. So all of them, really, it's not surprising to see the top player for each of those clubs having the best points.
Official FPL also released a list of the 2023 stats leaders as well. And for me, there wasn't too many surprises on here. Mo Salah was the leading point scorer. Erling Haaland was the leader for returns and goals. That definitely wasn't a surprise. Ollie Watkins got the most assists with 16. Salah got 12 double-digit hauls. In fact, Ollie Watkins is featured on here twice as well. Ian, it just backs up what we already knew, didn't it? That you kind of need to have Ollie Watkins and Mo Salah most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing that jumped out to me, how good Mo Salah is, because, you know, we know that, don't we? But I think at the start of this season, we maybe needed a little bit of a reminder. There was lots of game week one teams that didn't include Salah. Mm-hmm. He was the one that people seemed to leave out when they were getting Haaland and Son and others. And Saka and people like that at the start of the year. I mean, he scored 40 more points than any other asset in any position across FPL in 2023. He is the best FPL asset, despite how we felt about Erling Haaland over the last season, which is saying something because he was the perma-captain, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You know, Erling Haaland every single week, yeah, we don't need to worry about captain, it's Erling Haaland. Well, actually, it should have been Mohamed Salah because he's got 40 more points than him across 2023. And more double-digit hauls, which obviously is what we're looking for as well with how explosive our captains can be. I mean, Haaland's been missing for probably more games than Salah, so I guess that's had an impact as well. So maybe if you looked at actually active game weeks, perhaps Haaland's metric would be higher than Salah. But, you know, this is a reminder that consistency of performance and point scoring, exactly what we're looking for in FPL, Salah is still the best.
Bruno Fernandes leads the way for chances created in 2023. I can't quite work out whether that tells me he's brilliant or United aren't good at finishing, Ian.
Both.
Yeah. Potentially both, I suppose. I mean, United have underperformed their XG hugely this season so far. And obviously Bruno Fernandes would have been responsible for a lot of those chances created. He is a very creative footballer. I wonder how much of that's affected by Kevin De Bruyne missing the football that he's missed this season as well. I guess that he would have been really high in terms of chances created and maybe even higher than Bruno Fernandes if he'd been fit this year. But maybe that points to 2024 being a Manchester United attack time as well, if they can find the rhythm. I know obviously the Forest game was a step back after Aston Villa, but that shows how many chances they're creating. And if Hoyland can find his form, Garnacho can continue what he's doing, maybe United's attack are something still to look at.
Yeah, rewind back to the opening weekend of the season. I think we all had a Manchester United midfielder in our team, didn't we? We were all desperate for it was who are you going for, Rashford or Fernandes? Oh, how things change. Should also point out that Mo Salah also leads the way for shots. So he leads the way in three categories there. Sam, I had to come to you on goalkeepers. Alisson with the most clean sheets, Bernd Leno with the most save points. I sometimes think we sleep on Leno a bit when we talk about goalkeepers.
I think we do sometimes, but that's because Fulham don't necessarily keep as many clean sheets as we would want. But, you know, at points in the season, we will see a lack of clean sheets. And that's always the case at the beginning of the season. And so having somebody like a Leno or a Fodringham at that point, when they pick up a load of save points, is sometimes quite useful. But at this part of the season, I think going for a goalkeeper that is most likely to return clean sheets feels like the right thing to do. And Fulham, I don't know, I think there's starting to be some options at Fulham. We had Jimenez coming in, didn't we, a couple of weeks ago, and then obviously picking up the red card and missing out, coming back in and then getting the goal this week. So I don't know. I like Leno as an option. I just think that there are better goalkeeper options. But when it comes to save points, if that's a priority for you, and if you're looking to kind of make sure that your goalkeeper picks up those additional extra points, which is always nice, then going for somebody like Leno, who regularly makes the saves, is always useful.
Can I just give someone a shout out who I thought would be on that list and didn't quite make it? Alfie Doughty at Luton. Only scored six fewer points than Carlton Morris. But I'm really, really, if I can make a 2024 prediction, I think at some point this season, we will all own Alfie Doughty. I think it will come around the double game weeks, perhaps when the game against Bournemouth is rearranged. He's 4.4 million, 1.6% owned. In his last five game weeks, which have been against Arsenal, Manchester City, Newcastle, Sheffield United and Chelsea. So there's some really tough games in there. He's had one goal, four assists, one clean sheet and six bonus points. He's got five assists this season, which is only bettered by defenders in Porro and Trippier. He's got more than Trent Alexander-Arnold after his performance against Chelsea. And I think if we're sleeping on Luton or sleeping on anyone across the game at the moment, I think Alfie Doughty will find his way into our teams at some point. That's my Mystic Meg 2024 prediction right there.
Clip that up, social team, and we'll have it ready to go when he does nothing. No, I'm joking. Anyway, let's try and keep on the straight and narrow. And let's talk about the topic which we have been discussing being on the horizon for weeks. It is finally here. We are losing a lot of highly owned and popular FPL players to AFCON and the Asian Cup. In fact, there are 43 players in the Premier League who've been named in their country's final squads for both or either of those competitions respectively. So some of the biggest misses for FPL managers, aside from Son and Salah, will also be Onana at Manchester United, Hwang, Mbeumo, Vissa, Jackson and Kudus at West Ham. Now, players could be unavailable for their Premier League teams until as late as game week 24, depending on how far their national teams progress in the competitions. I enjoyed on British TV the other day, Jamie Carragher kind of wishing Mo Salah good luck, but also kind of saying he hoped he was back sooner rather than later. And Mo Salah saying, no, I'm going there to win. So, of course, we do have a decision. Let's firstly see if any of us have come any closer to deciding what we're going to do with Salah and Son, especially given the fact we've already discussed that Bowen isn't quite the asset we hoped he'd be at this point. Jules, what's your plan?
So I think that Phil Foden is obviously a very good shot to go back to what Ian said last week and again on this show. I like Mikel Olise at Crystal Palace, who have some decent fixtures to come. I know they play Arsenal in game week 21, but after that, it gets better. I just think Olise is a super talent that he's now confident. And I think the way Palace play, which is a lot of individual kind of brilliance in the last third of the pitch, I think he could shine in that. And Leon Bailey as well. This is the three names that I've got in mind. I had a question for Sam in the sense that, is it better to sell both Son and Salah, or would you keep one on your bench, Salah, for example, and then just get rid of Son and replace him? I'm not really sure. I've thought about it too much now. I refuse to think about it again until I hear Sam's advice.
No pressure then.
Don't tell him he's top of the league.
Oh, am I top of the league?
Both.
Oh, sorry,
keep
I forgot.
Them both, Jules.
I was top of the league.
I'll tell you, Jules, keep them both, mate. Just bench him. You'll be fine.
So I think my plan is to sell one of them and hold the other one. Now, they have both dropped 0.1. So we talked before, didn't we, about how team value can be quite an important conversation when it comes to whether you keep or sell these players, because you're going to have to spend more money to get them back again. But in reality, if they keep dropping in price in the way that they have been so far, then that team value conversation is lesser. So for example, on Sunday, Salah was owned by 55.2% of the game. Now he's owned by 46.6% of the game. Son, he was owned by 44.5% of the game, now owned by 38% of the game. So quite a substantial numbers of managers dropping them already. I think, you know, we said before, didn't we, it comes down to a choice between who do you think is going to go further in their competitions. Now, in reality, I think they could both go quite a long way. I think my plan is to keep Salah for now, bench him, sell Son, and then give myself the group stages to see how Salah and Egypt are getting on before I make a decision on what I do with him. Because
so you could sell him, but later, is that what you mean? Because I was going to do that. I was going to sell Son, keep Salah on the bench the whole time he's away.
It's the money involved in him, isn't it?
It's the money, yeah, exactly. So that's my kind of thought process was, I'll sell Son, probably move him, well, to anyone like you've just mentioned, or maybe I stick at Spurs and go just across to Richarlison or somebody along those lines. Keep Salah on the bench for now, third bench him for game week 21. By the time game week 21's played, we'll have a bit more understanding of how are Egypt progressing in that group. I'm expecting them to make it out of the group quite comfortably. I'm not expecting it to be an issue, but you never know. And then maybe I might look to move him on a little bit later on in the competition. But right now, I can't see that I'm going to massively need the money out of Salah to get to Haaland. So if I don't need to sell Salah to get Haaland, then I might as well just hold Salah and have the advantage to bring him back. Because in an ideal world, I don't want to have to pay my wild card when AFCON and the Asian Cup ends. I want to be able to hold that much later on till we get towards the double game weeks. And I kind of fear that if I sell both Son and Salah now, I'll struggle to get them both in without either taking multiple points hits or playing my wildcard chip. And I don't really want to do that.
Ian, what about you? It's really tough, isn't it? Because as we mentioned there, it's a big factor in my thinking when I looked. Obviously, it'd be great to sell Salah to have all that money to play with. But we don't know exactly when they're going to be back. There's so many things at play and the money really is a big thing for me.
Yeah, it's definitely team dependent because it depends on how good your bench is as well. If you want to carry along, you know, a Salah or a Son on your bench, you need to make sure that whoever's coming off it is good enough to be able to play every week moving forward. I'm different to Sam. For me, I think I'll sell them both. I want to maximise whatever I can do in the interim period. The only thing that's beginning to put me off is the lack of options in a way. I mean, we've talked about how we're a little bit put off by Bowen considering the game against Brighton and some of the availability issues that West Ham have. Phil Foden, to me, looks as good as it gets, like we've talked about, but we still don't know what impact Kevin De Bruyne is going to have on Phil Foden when he's back and whether that pushes Foden back out to the right-hand side. It's been as the number 10 through the middle, or one of the number 10s for City, where he's really shone. And obviously, that's been without Erling Haaland as well, who's also coming back. So that's quite a lot to add to the mix in there. But I just feel like this is an opportunity for people like myself who are chasing still a little bit on people to really push forward and be aggressive with it, take them both out. If I'd gone through with what I would have done last week, Foden would already be in my team for Son. So I'd have had one less decision to make, and then it would have just been who's going to replace Salah. And I probably will need the money as well for Haaland. So I could carry Son along, but I couldn't carry Salah along and bring Haaland in without taking a hit this next week. So for the people I want, I mean, obviously I could bring in someone really cheap. So when I'm looking at it now, I think I will take them both out, but it's just about trying to decide who. And that's why this FA Cup period is going to be so important for us to gain a little bit more information. So looking at the FA Cup fixtures, obviously we've talked about having a look at West Ham. But I also want to have a look at Tottenham against Brighton on Friday. I mean, how they are without Son. Richarlison has been so good. 5 goals in his last 5 game weeks. So he looks the clear option in their midfield. 6.9 million. James Maddison could be back soon as well. Obviously, there's Kulusevski to come back in from the last game when he was suspended. They've got Manchester United away in game week 21. Then there's an FA Cup fourth round. Maybe you're looking at sort of game week 22 to bring in their assets possibly, although United haven't been brilliant, have they? So maybe you do that straight away. And Liverpool are the other one without Salah because they've got Arsenal and they've also got the League Cup ties as well. So you're going to get a brilliant idea of how they're shaping up without Salah. And if someone like Diogo Jota at 7.7 million steps forward as an option for us, I mean, he's only needed 6 minutes against Burnley to score, 26 minutes against Newcastle to get 2 assists. So what he could do with 90 minutes for Liverpool, I don't know. But I think these FA Cup games are so important for us to decide what to do. Because on the flip side of all of this, if no one steps forward and no one looks like a clear option, then maybe Sam's path of keeping at least one of them on the bench is the way to go.
Okay, so still plenty of thinking to do, but the FA Cup weekend is going to be so important. So we'll review what we've seen in those cup fixtures and potential replacements for Salah and Son in next week's show. Let's now, though, as I've said, go through the best performing players in each position because it will really help managers who are thinking of using their second wildcard very soon. Just quickly, any of you guys using the wildcard in the next few weeks? I'm guessing no, Jules.
No, not yet.
Nope. Sam's definitely not going to be.
Nope.
Doesn't even need to answer that. And Ian is also saying no to me. Why would you change your team performing that well, Ian? Let's start with goalkeepers, though. You can only have 2 goalkeepers, obviously. Sam would like to have loads of them just to make sure she had the right one. Alisson is the highest scoring despite missing 2 matches through injury. Sam, I'm sorry, but we have to talk with you about goalkeepers. Is it worth spending a bit more money on a keeper like Alisson this season? Would you like me to just go to Ian?
No, it's fine. I'll talk about goalkeepers. I love talking about them. It's like my mastermind conversation, this is.
Very niche.
Yeah. Alisson, yes, actually, I do think that there is, particularly at this point of the year, at the beginning of the season, I don't like spending much money on goalkeepers because there's not as many clean sheets. Then we get into the season, we start to see the defences that are really solid. We start to see the ones that are keeping the most clean sheets. And Alisson and Liverpool are starting to be back in that clean sheet conversation again. the January transfer window, we haven't mentioned that yet, is open now. So we might see some new signings coming in for certain teams that might affect the goalkeeper choices that we want to make, particularly if you're on wildcard. Like, that's another reason why I like to hold my wildcard till a bit later on, because once the window closes, then we have a clearer clarity on who's playing where at each club. With Liverpool, you know what you're getting defensively. You know what you're getting with Alisson. He's the highest scoring goalkeeper in the game for a reason, because Liverpool are keeping clean sheets. So I do think that he's potentially worth the extra, particularly when you think that I've got two goalkeepers who, if I just had one of them, I could easily afford to have Alisson and have a little bit of money left over if I paired him with Turner. So I do quite like Alisson as a pick, but I think, like, I was really surprised not to see some of the cheaper goalkeepers in this list, because we obviously see Onana up there. And at the beginning of the season, he was terrible for me.
Yeah, the thing for me is, you know, it's been cheap goalkeepers all the way this season, really, hasn't it? And I think Areola is only, what, 3 points behind Alisson for the season, and he's still 1.5 million cheaper. So I just don't think it's worth spending the money. And I think we'll want that money when everyone's back from the tournament. So we want Haaland back in our team as well. So I'd just go still as cheap as possible.
Yeah, I agree. I hate spending money on goalkeepers. Into defenders then, and the top three places are three of the top five most expensive defenders in the game. Trent Alexander-Arnold leading the way. Kieran Trippier, who is, of course, at the moment out with injury, is second. Then Pedro Porro. All of a sudden, should we be going big at the back again, do you think, Jules?
We mentioned Trent a lot, didn't we? And for some of us, the dream was to have him. Ian obviously had him a long time ago. Sam brought him in and obviously jinxed him.
Broke him.
But, you know, it's. I think Trent is great. And if you can really afford Trent, of course. I don't know who would want to still have Kieran Trippier right now and who would still be buying him, considering his form. I mean, it's not his fault, but his form has been dreadful, so has Newcastle. And in a way, for him to still be the second highest points for a defender shows you that, and we've said a lot, defenders have struggled really at some point to get points, because Trippier should not really be, after what we saw in the last 10 games or so, still be as high as he is. But it's also not just the defending for him. He's obviously set pieces, et cetera, but yeah, I think for me, Pedro Porro is one of the revelations of the season. He was obviously already in the league last season, but how good he's been this season in possession, especially going forward, has been great. And then Saliba, Zinchenko to finish it off. Zinchenko, again, a bit strange considering he hasn't been in great form at all of late, but Trent, Saliba and Pedro Porro really are the three Rolls Royces of defenders in the game this season so far.
Yeah, are you surprised though, Ian, that we aren't seeing some of the cheaper options on the list there? Because even after Porro, it's Saliba and Zinchenko. I thought that, particularly in the early weeks of the season, we saw some of the cheaper defenders serving us quite well.
Yeah, we did, didn't we? Because we were taking the value out of our defence to invest in the midfield and attack in the early weeks. Someone like Joachim Andersen at Crystal Palace has slipped down a little bit. He had a huge price rise from 4.5 million to over 5 because so many people had got him in. He's dropped down a little bit now. He's 4.9 and he's just below this bracket after Zinchenko in fifth. There's Virgil van Dijk, Ben White, then Andersen. And surprisingly, actually, James Tarkowski just behind him. I mean, that's probably due to that run that Everton had a few weeks ago. Mikalenko as well, he's only a point behind Tarkowski. And I wonder if Everton are the cheap defence that we'll look at in the second half of this season. That was part of my thinking. I think I mentioned before that I'd brought in Jarrod Branthwaite this week. And I think Everton potentially are, you know, from the cheap defences, the one that we'll be looking at in the second half of the season. But yeah, it is surprising that it's all expensive assets that are at the top of the defenders list. But then again, that's why they're expensive, isn't it? They should be at the top of the list. Trent Alexander-Arnold is really expensive, so he should definitely be clear at the top of this list.
Quickly, in one word, Ian, I think I know the answer to this. If you're on a wild card, is Trent Alexander-Arnold must have?
No.
No. Now I need you to explain it. Go on.
Shock.
I don't think he is. I don't think he's a must have. I'd pick him if you're asking me what to do, but he's 8.5 million. So you're looking at a period now with Son and Salah being out. But when they come back, you may well need the money out of Trent. So if you're playing your wild card now, you have to be thinking about what you're going to do when these players are back. You need to have a plan moving forward. Otherwise, you're going to be left taking hits and having to do huge surgery to your team. And I go back to something I've said several times. Just be careful what you do with the money. You don't want to be spreading the money out right across your side and then really struggling to get back to Son, Salah, Haaland when we want him as well. Maybe Trent is the way to do it, having said that, where he's really expensive and you can just empty out, you know, 4 million, 4.5 million nearly. But I don't think he's a must-have. Liverpool's fixtures are tricky over the next couple as well. So maybe you could look at doing it differently. But I'd pick him, I suppose. That's the way to answer it.
On to midfielders then. And this is maybe the position where managers will actually struggle, with three of the five highest scoring midfielders in the game having disappeared now to play for their national teams. This just enhances the value, though, and the importance of Saka, doesn't it, Jules? He's now essential.
Yes, and certainly the goal at Fulham is maybe like a bit of a turning point, because before that, he'd been struggling a little bit in terms of returns. And even his old season, if you take away the penalties, hasn't been that good, really, when you think how good he is and how good he was last season, for example. So despite that kind of deep of form, I still think that, yeah, you need to have him. He's heavily honed, though. So if you have another idea, if you want to bridge the gap with people in your mini league or something who have Saka, you can always take a gamble and go for someone less owned. But I think it's your own risk, though, because he at some point will get very good again.
It was interesting, actually, looking at the stats ahead of game week 20, Sam, wasn't it? Because he was incredibly popular as a transfer out, considering we know just what he can do on his day. He was, if you take out the injured players or suspended players, so the players that were actually available, he was the third most popular transfer out. Do you think managers are going to regret that now, or going to be looking to bring him back in?
Yeah, I must admit, heading into game week 20 with Saka, I was becoming increasingly frustrated by him, because he's a lot of money to spend and wasn't getting the returns. A lot of teams doubling up on him when he's playing against them, and that was making him less effective. However, with the fixtures that Arsenal have, he was never a priority sell for me, and I think he shouldn't be for most FPL managers. If you did sell him, then I do think you're probably going to be looking at the fixtures coming up for Arsenal with Salah and with Son disappearing, with Hwang disappearing, and thinking he would be an easy transfer back in again. You just take one of those out and you bring Saka back. And that would absolutely be the move that I would make if I didn't have Saka anymore.
On to the forwards then. And maybe this shouldn't be a shock, but it still is a shock. Haaland isn't the highest scoring forward. Ollie Watkins is. I think we've waxed lyrical about him enough on this podcast. But is it a surprise to see him above Haaland, Ian?
Yeah, a little bit, because Haaland's been so good for us, hasn't he? Although not as good as Mo Salah, as we found out earlier on in the podcast across the last calendar year. On wildcard, this is the advantage, isn't it? You can wait until the end of the period before game week 21, with all the matches being played and all the cups, to see what position we're in. Erling Haaland, Pep said he's back in January, which is helpful for Pep in terms of what he normally says, but still not that helpful where he gives us an exact date in January, which is obviously quite an expansive time, a month. It's 31 days. So if we have, well, we have a press conference on Friday ahead of their FA Cup game against Huddersfield, where we undoubtedly will find out a little bit more about Haaland, and we'll then have a press conference, fortunately for us, ahead of their game week 21 game against Newcastle, because the other factor that we're going to be looking at in game week 21 is the winter break and the split weekend. So 10 are playing on weekend one, 10 are playing on weekend two. So the teams who are playing on weekend two, we ain't going to know anything about their team news from the press conferences, because they'll be held a week after the deadline. This is the only time this season that this happens. And it hasn't happened for, I think, 2 or 3 years in the Premier League as well, because of the effect of the World Cup and the pandemic as well. Fortunately, though, City are one of the ones in that first weekend. So we've got two press conferences from Pep, three if you include post-match against Huddersfield, where hopefully there'll be another word which helps us even more as to when Erling Haaland is back. Because if he is back on a wild card, get him straight back in.
Yeah, I feel like so much when it comes to the forwards, if you're on a wild card or if you're thinking of making any transfers, so much is dependent on Haaland and his availability, isn't he? So yeah, keep an eye on whatever Pep says or doesn't say. Looking at the balance of teams as well, Sam, what do you think is the way forward in terms of three up front, or should it still be two with the cheaper third forward?
No, I think that we should be going three up front now. I mean, I made that move. Well, now I've got a front eight, which is problematic anyway going forward, because I'm going to have to bench somebody, which we know what that means for whoever gets benched. But I do think that probably what I'll do is I'll take some money out of one of my midfielder slots and keep the three up top, because it feels to me like there's so many good value options in the forward line at the moment, whether it's Solanke, whether it's Cunha, who we've mentioned already, whether it's going for the expensive ones like you guys had a few weeks ago and having Haaland, Alvarez and Watkins up there together. Like there's a lot of really nice options. And by having three forwards, you would differentiate your team away from the norm. And that will give you an advantage potentially in the coming weeks as managers who don't wildcard look to make that transition to a front three. So I personally think that the front three is the way to go. Play three, four in the midfield and then three at the back. Or maybe we might even see managers wanting to play four at the back, depending upon how they've invested in the defence.
Okay, well, hopefully that has helped you if you are on a wildcard. We'll be back next week reflecting on the FA Cup action. Hopefully we'll have some more solutions for our Salah and Son-shaped headaches and potentially even more help for those wildcard chips. A reminder, if you do want to join our FPL Pod Mini League, the code is IB3WLK. We'll be back next Thursday to look ahead to Game Week 21, which is going to be a bit of a bumper one because it is, of course, spread across two weekends. Thanks for listening and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.